Good afternoon, and welcome to the PennantPark Investment Corporation's first fiscal quarter 2021 earnings conference call. Today's conference is being recorded. At this time, all participants have been placed in a listen-only mode. The call will be open for a question-and-answer session following the speaker's remarks. If you would like to ask a question at that time, simply press star 1 on your telephone keypad. If you would like to withdraw your question, press star 2 on your telephone keypad. It is now my pleasure to turn the call over to Mr. Art Penn, Chairman and Chief Executive Officer of PennantPark Investment Corporation. Mr. Penn, you may begin your conference.
Good morning, everyone. I'd like to welcome you to PennantPark Investment Corporation's first fiscal quarter 2021 earnings conference call. I'm joined today by Aviv Efrat, our Chief Financial Officer. Aviv, please start off by disclosing some general conference call information and include a discussion about forward-looking statements.
Thank you, Art. I'd like to remind everyone that today's call is being recorded. Please note that this call is a property of PennantPark Investment Corporation and that any unauthorized broadcast of this call in any form is strictly prohibited. Audio replay of the call will be available by using the cell phone numbers and PIN provided in our earnings press release as well as on our website. I'd also like to call your attention to the customary safe harbor disclosure in our press release regarding forward-looking information. Today's conference call may also include forward-looking statements and projections, and we ask that you refer to our most recent filings with the SEC for important factors that could cause actual results to differ materially from these projections. We do not undertake to update our forward-looking statements unless required by law. To obtain copies of our latest SEC filings, please visit our website at PennantPark.com or call us at 212-905-1000. At this time, I'd like to turn the call back to our Chairman and Chief Executive Officer, Art Penn.
Thank you, Aviv. First, we hope that you, your families, and those you work with are staying healthy. I'm going to spend a few minutes discussing how we fared in the quarter ended December 31st, how the portfolio is positioned for the upcoming quarters, our capital structure and liquidity, the financials, then open it up for Q&A. Despite the challenging economic conditions brought on by the pandemic, we are pleased with our performance this past quarter. We achieved a 14.5% increase in adjusted NAV. Adjusted NAV went up $1.10 from $7.59 to $8.69. We have several portfolio companies in which our equity co-investments have materially appreciated in value as they are benefiting from the K-shaped recovery. This is solidifying and bolstering our NAV. We will highlight those companies in a few minutes. As part of our business model, alongside the debt investments we make, we selectively choose to co-invest in the equity side by side with the financial sponsor. Our returns on these equity co-investments have been excellent over time. Overall for our platform, from inception through December 31st, our $217 million of equity co-investments have generated an IRR of 28% and a multiple on invested capital of 2.9 times. In a world where investors may want to understand differentiation among middle market lenders, our long-term returns on our equity co-investment program are a clear differentiator. With regard to income generation, we have the opportunity to rotate out of our equity investments over time and into yield instruments. In addition, we have the ability to grow the PNNT balance sheet and that of our PSLF JV with Pantheon, which should also generate additional income for the company. Although we never predicted a global pandemic, as you may know, we have been preparing for an eventual recession for some time. Prior to the COVID-19 crisis, we proactively positioned the portfolio as defensively as possible. The overall portfolio is constructed to withstand market and economic volatility. As of December 31st, average debt to EBITDA in the portfolio was 4.4 times, and the average interest coverage ratio, the amount by which cash income exceeds cash interest expense, was 3.3 times. We have no non-accruals on our book out of 89 different names in PNNT and PSLF. We have largely avoided some of the sectors that have been hurt the most by the pandemic, such as retail, restaurants, health clubs, apparel, and airlines. Although PNNT does have exposure to oil and gas, which we'll discuss later. The portfolio is highly diversified with 81 companies in 29 different industries. Since inception, PNNT has invested $6 billion at an average yield of 12%. This compares to an annualized realized loss ratio of about 25 basis points annually. If we include both realized and unrealized losses, the annualized loss ratio was only 24 basis points annually. This strong track record includes our energy investments, our primarily subordinated debt investments made prior to the financial crisis, and now some portion of the pandemic. Our performance through the global financial crisis and recession was excellent. During that recession, the weighted average EBITDA of our underlying portfolio companies declined by 7.2% at the bottom of the recession. This compares to the average EBITDA decline of the Bloomberg North American High Yield Index of down 42%. We are proud of this downside case track record in the prior recession. Based on tracking EBITDA of our underlying companies through COVID so far, we believe that our EBITDA decline will be substantially less than it was during the global financial crisis. Many of our portfolio companies are in industries such as government services and defense, healthcare, technology and software, business services, and select consumer companies that are less impacted by COVID and where we have meaningful domain expertise. We believe that we are experiencing a K-shaped recovery with some companies and industries being large beneficiaries of the environment. We are pleased that we have significant equity investments in four of these companies, which can substantially move the needle of our NAV. I would like to highlight those four companies. The four companies are Cano, WheelPros, Walker Edison, and PT Network. Cano Health is a national leader in primary health care who is leading the way in transforming health care to provide high-quality care at a reasonable cost to a large population. Our equity position has a cost and fair market value on December 31st of $2.5 million and $72.9 million, respectively. Cano has been experiencing rapid growth with revenues nearly quintupling and EBITDA more than tripling over the last 3 years. We believe there's a massive market opportunity for Cano to grow in the years ahead with the Medicare Advantage program. During the quarter ended December 31st, we received $1.9 million of cash as a return of capital. The merger with Jaws Acquisition is scheduled to close at the end of March or early April. At that time, we will receive another $6.7 million of cash and own 6,629,953 shares of Cano Health in a limited partnership controlled by a financial sponsor, where the sponsor will earn 20% of the exit proceeds. The shares will be locked up for 6 months. From a valuation perspective, due to the lockup, the independent valuation firm valued the position with a 7% illiquidity discount to the traded value on December 31st. WheelPros is the largest national distributor of aftermarket custom wheels. The company has consistently grown since our initial investment, with revenue doubling and EBITDA tripling over the last 2.5 years. Our position has a cost of $1.1 million and a fair market value of $24.7 million as of December 31st. Walker Edison is a leading e-commerce platform focused on selling furniture exclusively online through top e-commerce companies. Since our investment was made in 2018, sales have more than tripled and EBITDA is up almost four times. Our position has a cost of $1.9 million and a fair market value of $15 million as of December 31st. PT Network is the leading physical and occupational therapy provider in the Mid-Atlantic states. Our equity investment in PT came through a restructuring, which came about after the company made several operational mistakes. We've always had a positive view of the industry and the outlook due to the industry tailwinds and demographics, which result in comparable companies trading at EBITDA multiples of 12 to 15 times. Under our ownership, we brought in an excellent management team who corrected those operational mistakes and has shepherded the company well through COVID. Our equity position has a cost of $23 million and a fair market value of $42 million as of December 31st. All four of these companies are gaining financial momentum in this environment, and our NAV should be solidified and bolstered from these substantial equity investments as their momentum continues. PNNT has the lowest percentage of energy investments since 2013. Energy investments represent only 6.5% of the overall portfolio. With regard to Ram Energy, the new credit facility led by Vast Bank under the Main Street Lending Program materially lowered Ram's cost of capital and provides a runway to execute on its operating plan and time to wait for a recovery in prices. During Q4, Ram was impacted by lingering impacts from COVID and a difficult 2020, which included higher debt, continued lower prices, reduced production, and the impact of monetizing its hedge position at the time of the refinancing. Additionally, Ram began work on its last two uncompleted wells, which were finished recently. While still early, production of these wells is expected to be strong. Even though the December 31 quarter had several impacts, Ram is now on stable operational and financial footing and should benefit from higher prices and production. The company is free cash flow positive after debt service and will use any free cash flow to service and repay debt. We will have a more fulsome operating update on the company next quarter. As of December 31st, equity represented approximately 35% of the portfolio. Our long-term goal continues to target that percentage down to about 10% of the portfolio. The substantially higher valuation of Cano increased that percentage by approximately 9% this past quarter. As we monetize the equity portfolio, we are looking forward to investing the cash into yielding debt instruments to increase net investment income. We were active this past quarter making new loans. I'll walk through some of the highlights. Applied Technical Services is a provider of non-destructive testing, calibration, lab, and consulting engineering services. We purchased $9.5 million of the first lien term loan and co-invested about $504,000 in the common equity. Odyssey Investment Partners is the sponsor. Hancock Claims Consultants is a leading insurance claims services company focused on the residential roofing market. We purchased $6 million of the term loan and purchased $450,000 of equity. Century Equity Partners is the sponsor. Rancho Health is a primary care provider in Southern California that is focused on offering value-based primary care. We purchased $3.7 million of first lien term loan and co-invested $1.1 million of common equity. Light Bay Capital is the sponsor. We purchased $8.5 million of the first lien term loan and purchased $730,000 of common equity in Sigma Defense Systems. The company is a leading IT services provider and systems integrator of satellite communication equipment for mission-critical airborne surveillance programs. Sagewind Capital is a sponsor. The outlook for new loans is attractive. We believe that middle market lending is a vintage business. This vintage of loans is likely to be the most attractive we've seen since the 2009 to 2012 time period. Leverage levels are lower, equity cushion is higher, yields are higher, and the package of protections, including covenants, are tighter. After enduring about 5 years of a late cycle market for middle market lending, it is refreshing to have attractive risk reward available to us. Let me now turn the call over to Aviv, our CFO, to take us through the financial results.
Thank you, Art. For the quarter ended December 31st, net investment income totaled 12 cents per share. Looking at some of the expense categories, base fees totaled $4.1 million. Taxes, general and administrative expenses totaled $1.3 million, and interest expense totaled $5 million. Net unrealized gain on our investments was $94 million, or $1.39 per share. Net unrealized depreciation on our credit facilities was 19 cents per share. Net realized loss on investments was 26 cents per share. Our dividend was equal to our net investment income. Consequently, NAV per share went from $7.84 per share to $8.78 per share. Adjusted NAV, excluding the mark-to-market of our liabilities, was $8.69 per share, up 14.5% from $7.59 per share. The increase in NAV was primarily due to an 8.6% valuation increase of the investment portfolio, which is now valued at 101% of cost versus 93% of cost last quarter. As a reminder, our entire portfolio, credit facility, and senior notes are marked to market by our board of directors each quarter using the exit price provided by independent valuation firms, securities and exchanges, or independent broker-dealer quotes when active markets are available under ASC 820 and 825. In cases where broker-dealer quotes are inactive, we use independent valuation firms to value the investment. Our spillover as of September 30th was 33 cents per share. Our GAAP debt-to-equity ratio, net of cash, was 0.9 times, down from 1.0 times last quarter. The regulatory debt-to-equity ratio, net of cash, which excludes SBIC debt, was 0.7 times, down from 0.9 times last quarter. With regards to our NAV, our GAAP NAV was $8.78 as of December 31st, up approximately 12% from the prior quarter, which reflects both the mark-to-market of our assets offset by the mark-to-market of certain liabilities. Assuming liabilities were not mark-to-market, adjusted NAV was $8.69, up approximately 14.5% from the prior quarter. We had ample of liquidity to fund revolver draws and we're in compliance with all of our credit facilities as of September 31st. We have readily available borrowing capacity and cash liquidity to support our commitments. We have a strong capital structure with diversified funding sources and no near-term maturities. We have $475 million revolving credit facility maturing in 2024 with a syndicate of banks, $119 million of SBA debentures maturing in 2026, and $86 million of unsecured notes maturing in 2024. We have been in consistent dialogue with our lenders and are thankful for their support. Our overall debt portfolio has a weighted average yield of 9.3%. On December 31st, our portfolio consisted of 81 companies across 29 different industries. The portfolio was invested 38% in first lien secured debt, 17% in second lien secured debt, 10% in subordinated debt, including 6% in PSLF, and 35% in preferred and common equity, including 3% in PSLF. 92% of the portfolio had a floating rate, all of which has a LIBOR floor. The average LIBOR floor is 1%. We have concluded in consultation with our board to extend the incentive fee waiver through March 31st, 2021. Now, let me turn the call back to Art.
Thanks, Aviv. To conclude, we want to reiterate our mission. Our goal is to generate attractive risk-adjusted returns through income, coupled with long-term preservation of capital. Everything we do is aligned to that goal. We try to find less risky middle-market companies that have high free cash flow conversion. We capture that free cash flow, primarily in debt instruments, and we pay out those contractual cash flows in the form of dividends to our shareholders. In closing, I'd like to thank our extremely talented team of professionals for their commitment and dedication. Thank you all for your time today and for your continued investment and confidence in us. That concludes our remarks. At this time, I would like to open up the call to questions.
Thank you. If you would like to ask a question, please signal by pressing star 1 on your telephone keypad. If you're using a speakerphone, please make sure your mute function is turned off to allow your signal to reach your equipment. Again, press star 1 to ask a question. We'll take our first question from Casey Alexander with Compass Point. My apologies. Our first question is coming from Mickey Schleien with Ladenburg. Please go ahead.
Yes, good afternoon, Art and Aviv. I have a similar question for PNNT that I had for PFLT, meaning that the fourth calendar quarter was a strong quarter for middle market M&A, but both the on-balance sheet and senior loan fund portfolio shrank, and the fee income was not particularly strong. Could you just give us some background on, you know, what's going on with that trend, you know, and is it across the platform, you know, something proactive that you're doing in terms of underwriting or something else?
Thanks, Mickey. It's a good question. You know, we had some refis earlier in the quarter, and then we had very strong originations, you know, towards the end. We were very busy closing deals between Christmas and New Year's, and we've been very busy since then. You know, we're in the core middle market, which we define as 15 to 50 of EBITDA. So these deals, you know, have a longer gestation cycle. There's more due diligence. There's more negotiating of covenants. And as a result, it's a more highly tailored bespoke business. We think it's got better risk-adjusted returns and more protections, and we get the added benefit of equity co-invest in many cases. But it's, you know, it's a more labor-intensive model. So we just had some, you know, early refinancings early in the quarter. We were very busy towards the tail end of the quarter, and we remain, you know, busy going forward. We've never had a problem ramping up over time. It just sometimes takes us a few quarters to ramp, and, you know, because we're so focused on capital preservation and being thoughtful, you know, it may take us a little longer, but we've never had a challenge ramping up any of these portfolios.
As a follow-up, Art, to that question, you know, typically the fourth calendar quarter is very busy, and then when the winter gets going, the first calendar quarter tends to be slow. But we're not in a normal cycle right now. My sense is that there's a lot of pent-up demand and dry capital. available. Do you think the first calendar quarter could be stronger than average just on a relative basis for the sector overall?
You know, it's tough to say because I think, you know, typically you're right, there's a December effect, and then sometimes the first calendar quarter is light. But then as things going, you may have a bunch of deals at the end of March then going into April. So you're right in pointing out that the business has some seasonality to it. Look, our teams are busy looking at deals and doing due diligence and negotiating things. And, you know, we remain busy. We, you know, our eyes on the longer-term prize of finding really good risk-adjusted returns for our vehicles and getting them to, you know, solid, appropriate leverage for the underlying risk. Hard for me really to give you any real strong guidance about, you know, calendar Q1 or Q2. We're pretty busy. You know, we like this vintage. We think this post-COVID vintage will be really good. It is really good, you know, higher quality companies than we saw pre-COVID. And where we are focused, which is this core middle market, not the upper middle market, we're still getting better risk-adjusted returns than we were before COVID. We're getting lower leverage, higher equity underneath us, stronger covenants, fewer and more diligence, the EBITDA adjustments, and attractive equity co-invest. So this vintage for us in our core middle market zone, you know, feels very attractive. So we're very excited about it.
Thank you for that, Art. Could you remind us on PSLF, you know, what is the fund's target leverage in terms of debt to equity, your target and your target ROE on your PSLF investment, excluding the members' sub-debt?
Yeah, so look, PSLF is ramping as well. We think that can be a $450 million vehicle over time. That's kind of 1.5 times debt to equity, kind of a 12%-ish ROE. So that will help ramp NII for PNNT. And PNNT obviously itself can have some dry powder. And then, of course, we have this equity rotation that we've been talking about and that we're looking forward to and working hard where we can to action that.
And that 12% that you just mentioned, is that purely on your equity investment or is that a blend of your equity investment and the subordinated debt investment?
Yeah, excellent point, Mickey. It's the combination of the sub-debt and the equity.
Okay. My last question is just a housekeeping question. Can you just give us a sense of what the main drivers of the realized loss was this quarter?
Yeah, the main driver was a company called MSpark or MailSouth, which did a restructuring, and therefore upon the restructuring, there was a realization event. Our second lien became equity. We and others put a new second lien in place, and we and other lenders are the control players of the company. Thankfully, the company is bouncing back quite nicely, not quite back to where it was pre-COVID, but on its way back to where it was pre-COVID. And we're optimistic that as we get towards the tail end of 2021, it'll be back kind of where it was pre-COVID, and we'll be able to do, you know, reasonably well in the investment. The company generates a lot of free cash flow. Even during the bottom part of COVID, it was still generating good free cash flow. So, but that realization event happened, and that's why you saw the realized loss this quarter.
Yeah, I understand. Thank you for that, and thank you for your time this afternoon. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank you. We're now taking our next question from Casey Alexander with Compass Point. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi, good afternoon. This is kind of a tricky question, but I think it sort of gets to what I think your balance sheet strategy is going forward. You know, your leverage for the BDC has come down quite a bit with the transaction creating the JV. Effective leverage is still there if you look through to the JV. So on balance sheet with PNNT, you previously had a target leverage ratio that was, I don't know if the exact number is, up around 1.5. Would you adjust that target leverage ratio to something lower simply because most of your a lot of your first lien was transferred into the JV, so you have a different composition and also the equity has higher volatility to NAV. Would you be targeting a lower target leverage ratio? And if so, I mean, at least until you have some success in rotating some of the equity and getting that equity percentage down?
It's a great question, and it is a tricky question. And you're right. You know, there's you might be willing to put one amount of debt on against first lien assets, another amount of debt against second lien or mezzanine assets, and yet another amount of debt against equity assets. So to some extent, you got to look to the underlying assets that you have and try to figure out what you're comfortable putting on relative to the asset and what the leverage is. I think at this point, 1.5, particularly given the complexion of the underlying assets, is too high. I think, you know, we probably over time could target something like 1.3, you know, depending on how things play through and you know, what assets we have. But certainly it would not be, you know, at this point, back up to the 1.5. I don't know if that answers your question directly or.
Yeah, so, well, yeah, it does. So if you're, you know, currently under one and you're willing to go to 1.3, then given the opportunity set, you do still have some substantial, earnings power, even without, selling down some of the equity, if I understand that correctly.
That's right.
All right, great. That's my only question. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. And now we take our next question from Robert Dodd with Raymond James. Please go ahead.
Hi, everyone. On the equity, obviously, I mean, you know, roughly a third of the book, as you said. Target 10. I mean, timeline-wise, a very difficult question to answer. There's also kind of embedded in that question, for me, how are you balancing? Obviously, you don't want to give up total return just to get coupon today, right? You don't want to exit equity too early, but at the same time, equity is very high as a percentage of the book, and I do think what you have expressed, and investors would prefer it to be down, but perhaps not at the expense of giving up total return just for income. So how are you balancing, you know, the view on that? I mean, obviously you don't control the exit of all these equity positions, but you do some. So how's that being, how's the view on that in terms of balance?
That is another tricky question, Robert Dodd. And, you know, there's a well-known research analyst I know who says it's all about NAV. It's all about NAV. And, you know, so like we have some of these big wins in equity, right? We could try to exit them earlier and convert those to cash to generate NII earlier in some cases. But you might be giving up some NAV upside if you exit earlier. You know, some of these you could go to the sponsor and say, you know, buy us out. And some of them would be happy to buy us out because they still see the next 10, 20, 30, 40% upside if they do. And that is a challenge of running a vehicle that, you know, a lot of people want yield, you know. So it's a tricky balancing act. You're right. It's hard for me to answer your question. And maybe we can talk, you know, you've written some good research about kind of, you know, NAV should take priority in certain cases. But that's how we've been playing it thus far. We've been saying, at this point, you know, this vehicle, you know, a lot of the ups are in the equity. Let's ride that and squeeze that as much as possible, and we will monetize that in the most optimal way and then take those proceeds and put it into yield instruments. But clearly there are some investors who say, you know, it's all about yield. You know, you kind of sell earlier, leave some money on the table, get out, and start deploying into cash-paying yield instruments. So today we've been playing it to the maximization hand, but we could pivot and start to take some of these gains earlier. We will probably, by definition, then be leaving some gains on the table. So that's the grapple that we have, to be quite honest. It's nice to have wins. It's nice to have victories. It's refreshing. It's nice to have energy be a relatively small, manageable piece of this portfolio after so many years. So it's nice to be having these conversations. But it is something we grapple with.
Yeah, and it's nice to see portfolio fair value above cost as well. First time in a while, so congrats on that. I mean, just one more if I can. I mean, you talked about, you know, you're still seeing, you know, this is looks like it's going to be a very good picture. You're still seeing lower leverage, stronger covenants, et cetera, versus, you know, pre-COVID. How much more so, if you could, that's more of a qualitative rather than quantitative. Is that actually material or is it marginal? And then, just given how competitive things are, how
Robert,
what is BSL market is, right? Can you hear me?
Robert?
Can you hear me?
Robert?
Yeah, I can hear Robert. Or do you hear Robert's question?
I guess not. Maybe I'll follow up with this later. Thanks.
Robert, I can hear you there. One second, while we might have technical difficulties. So bear with us for 30 more seconds, because I can hear you clearly. While we're trying to get Art back on the line here.
No problem.
My apologies. I'll step away and connect Mr. Penn. One moment, please.
Give us a couple more, a few more seconds here. I know his line was dropped earlier, so I guess we're experiencing the same technical difficulty here, Robert. But we do want to take your question.
No problem. Telephonic difficulties are part of life currently.
Yeah.
Mr. Art, join the conference.
Hello. Hi. Sorry, I'm back. Some technical difficulties. My apologies. Robert, you are asking a question.
Yeah. So, I mean, just talking about, you mentioned that you're still seeing low leverage, better terms and spreads currently in the middle market. If we look at the syndicated market, that all seems to pretty much be gone. Obviously, there's a lag between the two. Typically, there's been a lag. I mean, if do you think that the better terms you're seeing now are, if everything stays competitive, are going to evaporate? Or do you think some of that benefit in better terms, coupons, et cetera, is just going to be sustained, I mean, over the near term? I mean, I'm not asking about 3 years from now, obviously, but you know, over a somewhat prolonged period.
It's a great question. You know, just to definitionally, just everyone, to level set it for everyone, we're focused on what we call the core middle market, which is companies with 15 to 50 million of EBITDA versus the upper middle market, which is 50 million and above in our view. And 50 million and above is the threshold where we think companies can also access the broadly syndicated loan market or the high yield market in some cases, where some of our larger peers traffic and they write big loans to bigger companies. And that end of the market certainly has bounced back to where it was pre-COVID, really driven by the rebound in the broadly syndicated loan and high yield markets. You're right that, you know, we're kind of away from the fray and below that radar. Certainly the market is rebounded to some extent from where it was at the lows, you know, 6 months ago or so. But it's slow. It's slow. We like this end of the market. Even before COVID, there was a lot less competition. Capital was a lot less commoditized. We could still get covenants when everyone else was dealing with no covenants or covenant wide or covenant light. Even before COVID, our EBITDA adjustments were fully diligenced. Even before COVID, we could get equity co-invest if we like the equity. So, even pre-COVID, we still thought this kind of below 50 of EBITDA was a good place to be positioned. But certainly over time, as the economy recovers and as capital flows back, it's certainly going to be tightening for sure. But what's new? That's how we've been operating for a number of years. We came into COVID in our senior book at about 4x debt to EBITDA, which really positioned us well, you know, for COVID and kind of avoiding many of those sectors that, that got most impacted. So we were taking a more defensive posture, you know, going into this than many.
Yeah, I appreciate that. Thank you. And great quarter.
Thank you.
Thank you. We're taking our next question from Ryan Lynch with KBW. Please go ahead.
Hey, good morning, Art. Good morning, Aviv. Or good afternoon, I guess I should say. I have a couple questions. In your prepared comments, you mentioned four companies that you felt pretty good about the upside in, you know, that drove NAV this quarter as well as could contribute to this upside in the future. One company you didn't mention was MidOcean. Just curious, that company was written up pretty significantly this quarter. Can you just provide a background on what that business does and then what drove the markup in that investment?
Yeah, so it's a company that has been in the portfolio for a while. It was a restructured mezzanine investment where we, for a while, owned debt and equity. The debt got refinanced, and we own a residual equity position. The company distributes products to service stations, to gas stations, and it's had, you know, it did get hurt by COVID early on as people drove less, but has rebounded nicely. And they've been doing some, you know, very attractive add-on acquisitions and attractive multiples. So ever so gradually, the EBITDA of that company has been growing. It's not the, what we call kind of the top of the K-shaped recovery where we're seeing, you know, things like Walker Edison or Wheelpros or Cano, but it's kind of been a steady, steady Eddie grower. And at some point in the next year or two, you know, there may be an exit. We'll be able again to convert that equity investment into cash. But yes, it was a nice valuation upside this quarter.
Okay. And then from a higher level question, you mentioned the K-shaped recovery. Obviously, there's a lot of uncertainty of how, you know, the recovery or U.S. opening is going to take place and how long we're going to be dealing with COVID. How does the shape of the recovery or your outlook on the reopening process, how does that shape your guys' underwriting when you guys are looking at a new company or just even the type of company or the industry that you are looking in?
Yeah. So, look, we've really honed it down and are focusing on five different sectors where we think we have really excellent domain expertise, where these sectors have performed well during COVID, where there's high free cash flow, and where we can be, you know, among the smartest, you know, people in the room. So, you know, we mentioned them in our prepared remarks, but it's, you know, government services, defense, healthcare, software, and technology, business services, and consumer, you know, where we have this deep domain expertise, where we know the right questions to ask, where we've had really good track records. So, and in most of these sectors, in fact, all of them, they performed relatively well through COVID. So, you know, over time, you develop certain domain expertise in your business. We certainly have, and we've certainly made mistakes elsewhere too, as you know. So, you know, we want to continuously improve and get better and better. And kind of this is where our focus is going to be at this point, and stick to that. It's a wide enough band that we can see, you know, substantial deal flow. We can fill up our vehicles, you know, carefully and judiciously, and do it very, you know, very smartly. So that's, I don't know if I answered your question there, Ryan. Did I answer your question?
No, that's helpful context. It's a, you know, an impossible question to defer now, but it's good color on where your guys' headspace is at this point. So those are all my questions. I appreciate the time this afternoon, and really nice quarter, guys.
Thank you.
Thank you. And we take our next question from Kyle Joseph with Jefferies. Please go ahead.
Hey, good afternoon. Thanks for having me on. a lot of my questions have been addressed, but I just had two follow-ups on credit. On the non-accruals that were resolved during the quarter, was that driven more by recoveries or were those restructurings? I think you addressed one of those earlier, but just wanted to get your perspective there.
Yeah, thanks, Kyle. So, yes, we talked about MSpark Mail South earlier, which went through a restructuring. And then the other one was PRA, which is an events-related business. The sponsor agreed to put in additional equity beneath us. So that is back on accrual due to that investment by the sponsor.
Got it. And then more broadly on credit, can you give us a sense for revenue and EBITDA growth trends in the fourth quarter, that calendar fourth quarter, and how those compare to the third quarter and any changes you've seen year to date?
Yeah, it's a great question because we're trying to really precisely with our own portfolio figure out when was the bottom. You know, was the bottom, you know, March, was the bottom June, was the bottom September. And it's challenging because in most cases we get monthly financial statements, in some cases we get quarterly. So we're trying to figure that out as we speak. My off the cuff, you know, answer would be we think EBITDA on average was up 3 to 5% in the fourth quarter. That's me guesstimating at this point. But, you know, give it another few months and we'll have some precise data for you as we hopefully on the next call we can kind of more precisely identify for you when the bottom of COVID was for us and, you know, what the trends are. But that's kind of a guesstimate at this point.
Got it. Thanks for the time and thanks for answering my questions.
Thanks, Kyle.
Thank you. We're taking our next question from Melissa Wedel with JP Morgan. Please go ahead.
Good afternoon, guys. Thanks for taking my question. First, I wanted to just touch on the pace of portfolio leverage. If I heard you right earlier in the call, you aren't reliant on sort of turning the elevated equity positions in order to deploy new capital. You also noted it's tough to give guidance on the origination side, but I thought I'd follow up on the flip side of that, which is, do you have much visibility into expected repayment activity in the near term?
Yeah, we don't see a lot of repayments in the near term, although sometimes you never know, but we don't see a ton of repayments. So, I mean, our goal and our thought is the portfolio is going to gradually grow, you know, over the coming quarters in a careful, thoughtful manner, you know, while we're looking to monetize these equity positions.
Okay, got it. And then as a follow-up, this is sort of a broader strategic question. I think we're seeing across the BDC landscape some of the senior loan vehicles being recombined or reabsorbed with the primary BDC. Just curious if that's something that you guys have thought about with regard to PFLT and CNNT and how you would think about the puts and takes of something like that. Thank you.
So it's a good question. It's a good question. And look, we're always trying to do anything we can to maximize shareholder value. And, you know, everything's always on the table and we will evaluate. I think for us at PNNT today, we've got, you know, a little bit of work cut out for us, you know, kind of to get PNNT where it should be. And then where we get it where it should be, we will lift our head up and figure out and answer and ask questions like you just asked. You know, at our firm, it's important for you to know that we've got two separate strategies on both the public and the private side. We have an opportunistic strategy, which looks a lot like PNNT without the energy. And in that strategy, for instance, we had a really excellent 2020, you know, kind of a net 29% return to limited partners. And then we have a senior debt strategy that looks a lot like PFLT. And, you know, our private funds had like an 18% net return, you know, in 2020. So really excellent returns, you know, in our two separate strategies. But look, first things first, we gotta do what we need to do with PNNT to get it in good shape before we can even begin asking those questions. But after we get that in the right shape, we're certainly open and we'll discuss all kinds of options.
Thanks, Art.
Thank you. We're taking our next question from Jim Alskull from Aviation Advisory Service, Inc. Please go ahead.
Good afternoon, gentlemen. Thanks for taking my call. A couple of things. In the fiscal year that ended September 30th, you repaid $31.5 million in SBA debentures. Why did you do that?
Well, that's because we were getting repayments in the SBIC, and there's a maturity coming up in a few years, and you know we owe the money back, so that's why we paid it back.
Makes sense. How do you decide, if you're looking at new opportunities, which assets to allocate to Pennant Park itself, which to PSLF, and which to the private funds? I may have asked.
It's a good question. So we have SEC exempt relief, which is kind of a similar box that we and all of our peers, you know, have, which says that when a deal comes in and it fits multiple and the characteristics of the loan fit multiple boxes, you allocate amongst the vehicles based on available capital. So it's a mathematical calculation that gets done, you know, when a senior deal comes in or when a mezz deal comes in, you know, where it gets allocated.
And again, for the I didn't look too closely in the news release, but for the fiscal year that ended September 31st, there was a significant increase in PIC income, both in absolute terms and as a percentage of total revenues. Why was that, and are those PIC instruments performing?
It's a good question, and those are from the two former non-accruals, which are PRA and now South M Spark. Those are the drivers of that.
So since they're former non-accruals, that means you think it's now money good?
Well, we think they're money good. They may not be paying us cash interest. So in certain cases, you're keeping the cash in the company for cushion and for it to be able to weather COVID.
Oh, so in other words, as part of the restructuring, they gave you some PIC paper in lieu of the cash interest that you were due?
No. Yes.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you. It appears there are no further questions at this time. Mr. Penn, I'd like to turn the conference back to you for any additional or closing remarks.
Thanks, everybody, for participating today. We'll speak to you next in early May as we review our March quarter end. So thank you very much for your time today. Have a good day.
This concludes today's call. Thank you for your participation. You may now disconnect.